Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Andrew on the board. SP Futures up 50 cents. NASDAQ Futures unchanged after a huge update yesterday. After the PPI number came out, which, to me, we'll talk about in a second, wasn't all that good, and yet all of a sudden everybody just said, oh, God, this is the greatest, so off they went, which probably means that either people have a premonition, that's a nice way to say it, of the number today, or they realize that the Fed maybe is putting money into the system. But the rest of us, since they canceled the weekly report, don't really know. We're kept in the dark, which is where we ought to be, Kevin, where we should be in the dark. We're just the schlumps, the serfs, as they used to call them. Kevin with us?
Good morning. Well, I am. I just got the launch, so I caught the end of your sentence.
I'm saying yesterday was a massive update. Either people have a premonition or knowledge of today's number, maybe, or they know that the Fed's pouring money in, which, you know, they probably shouldn't be doing before an election, but they probably are. But some people would know that. We wouldn't, since we don't get the weekly reports anymore. Now, is anybody naive enough to think that the weekly reports still aren't being done somewhere by some gnome at some desk? And do you think he's the only person that knows the number? I'm going to say no.
They're in a database with built-in queries, and you're damn right, nobody killed them, I'm sure.
No. Very interesting. Just saying. So next week, am I going to be able to get down here for Stocks and Jacks Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday with this convention? They're out to how many? Andrew, see if you can find out how many streets they are away from the United Center. Now, even if you live there, they're not even like letting you in, which is interesting.
Wait! You're telling me the Secret Service is going to have a perimeter around the United Center?
They're going to have a huge perimeter.
When did they start doing perimeters?
You know, I'm sitting here racking my old brain. I went to the convention in 96. I could have sworn that me and the other major domos from the SIBO just took a cab over there and just got out. I don't think there was any problem. But then again, it was, you know, how many years ago? I think I would have remembered if I got dropped off four blocks away and had to truck it over in my suit. But maybe not. I mean, I think I would have. But no, they're talking about giving people ID cards. And one lady's on TV goes, my sister's coming to visit. Can she get in? No. Okay. Duh.
So you have to have an ID to get anywhere near it.
Yeah.
So the same people that say you have to have an ID to vote. You can't have an ID to vote. You can't require an ID to vote.
Well, I mean,
that seems a little inconsistent.
Yeah, well, it's Kevin, we're not talking about an odd world. We're talking about a very odd world here, and I don't know how we fix it. We have people on the show emailing back and forth regarding policy issues, and actually, it's very educational. But the trend, I mean, you just look around, ask around. People are increasingly afraid. They're increasingly arming themselves. I'm not going to go bonkers on gun control or anything like that. But the fact is, we have how many couple hundred thousand, whatever they are, some people call them assault rifles, some people say they aren't, that have been purchased in the last like 20 years. It's whatever it is, it's not a great trend. I don't think. But the fact is, it's happening, and you sure as hell can't tell the next person he can't have one when there's half a million of them out there already. I mean, I don't know, how do you do that?
And Tom, I don't even think that's the issue. I think the issue really is that there are more and more people who are saying the police either can't or won't protect them, and so they have to protect themselves.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. We're absolutely on the same page here. I'm just saying it's not my idea of health necessarily at all. I mean. And you and I both, he was your year at Notre Dame, so you know him better than me, but I sure consider him a friend. Mike Hugele, whose wife got killed coming back from a charitable function at Comiskey Park, or whatever the hell they call it now, on the Dan Ryan. I don't know, they originally caught the guys, then they let them go, then they may have rearrested them. You would think that if you want people to feel that they're safe, that somewhere in the next year you would have a big news report saying, hey, these four idiots or five that were shooting and killed this lady on the Dan Ryan who just retired from being a special ed teacher. By the way, we got them. They're in jail, and they're never coming out again. People don't even think they need to do that. Everything's just okay. You're just supposed to, here, thank you, sir, may I have another? It's not okay, in my opinion. And so when people are, like you say, they're arming themselves sort of for a reason. And, you know, you can't coach fear. You can't tell somebody that they walk, you know, in a dangerous neighborhood in the morning on their way to work that they shouldn't have a gun when everybody else around them does. I mean, I don't see how you – I could never do that. I would sure like to be in an administration somewhere, even as advisor, that when the end of the 4 years or 8 years, people felt a hell of a lot safer and say, what do I need this gun for? Right? I'd love to see that, but I don't see that happening to you.
No.
I mean, I don't know if you caught some of the stuff we were talking about yesterday.
Well, and so the question is, you know, is this failure to protect citizens, is it intentional, or is it just garden variety incompetence?
As you know, because you and I talk outside the show, I'm in a complete toss up on that one. I don't know. I don't know why are we so. Can we really be that incompetent? When I was young, and I don't know if people tuned people up or what the hell they did in those days, but the police were usually really big guys with a billy club, and if you acted like an idiot, you're going to get whacked with the thing and thrown in the squad car. Now, nobody wants to get whacked with a billy club. I never was, but I sure as hell didn't want to be. And is it a brutal thing? Probably, but all the people who think the other direction, is there such a thing? Should your police officer have some kind of an advantage other than a gun, because they don't shoot anybody, over the person that they're arresting? There's no such thing as a officer. Are my hands high enough behind my back so you can put the cuffs on easily? I mean, there's never an arrest like that, is there? I mean, every arrest is some, there's some problem. The person doesn't want to be arrested, right? I mean, every stop for a speeding ticket, even if you get a little blue-haired lady, she's going to say, hey, the guy in front of me was going faster. What are you messing with me for? I mean, everybody's got an excuse, right? Anyway, we're not going to solve those kinds of problems, but why would a city want one of these conventions if it's an armed camp like this? You know, by the way, anybody who wants to protest, which is your right, they'll say, okay, you can protest over here. You can walk between these two parks. It's two blocks. Yeah, but we plan on having 30,000 people. We won't even fit in the two blocks. That's your problem. Now, does that mean that I'm going to come to this stuff?
How'd that kind of managing crowd management work in 68?
Not so well. Not so well. And in the same token, why even have a convention like in a city? Put it out somewhere? I mean, whatever. I don't know what, you know, people were last night. I ran into my judge buddies and stuff, and they were kind of laughing at how all this is coming down and how everybody says how competent they are, and I don't think they're just not. This, I mean, it's kind of shifting gears, but you know, Kevin, I got this wacko mind where everything's the same subject. I cannot believe, the more I read again last night, this article by this lady, she probably was told to write it, Jessica Dickler, which, again, the name is kind of weird, but this whole life.
She probably got a little grief about that as a kid.
Yeah, 59% of Americans wrongly think the U.S. is in a recession, a report finds. If 60% of people feel they're in a recession. No, you're not in a recession. Things are good. Look at this guy just paid $5 billion for his ball club. The economy's great. You should feel happy. Wait a minute, I don't feel happy. All these costs are up. I haven't gotten a raise. And oh, by the way, somebody got laid off. What part of you should feel good, the economy is great, don't you get? I mean, how can you even have that conversation with somebody? That is stone-cold ignorance for anybody who might have gone to third grade, much less university. And what am I missing?
You're not missing anything. I think that headline is like the perfect synopsis of, you know, how the political class looks at the rest of the world. I can't imagine that it could have been written any better, you know, as an unintentional expose, that you know, sort of explains everything that you need to know about that. And when I say that the political people, it is the politicians, but it is the media class. I mean, it's, you know, it's all one group, and they live in this other world, and really don't have a touch for the average person. And, you know, do our politicians actually, you know, out of all of them, I would imagine J.D. Vance probably has a pretty good touch for the average person, having, you know, given his upbringing. The guy who least should is Trump, and he's probably got a better feel for what the average person is thinking. You know, if you see him, you know, when, like, during his trial, he couldn't you know, he couldn't leave New York, so he's out there, you know, crack of dawn, you know, in Hispanic neighborhoods, in, you know, in Harlem, you know, all kinds of places, and just having a, you know, a real touch for people. That was, you know, really kind of strange to see. It was almost as if the trial gave him more benefit for being able to have those kind of displays than it did harm for him with the conviction.
Well, I would say that, even though I, again, you know, I'm no fan, there's no way he can't have a better feel about politics in a city as it relates to builders and payoffs and corruption and that kind of thing than him.
Well, yeah, because that whole commercial real estate world is, you know, there's an ethic to it that is not my ethics.
No, it's not. Yeah, there's a thing to it that just,
You know, the idea that, you know, every project you walk away and it's, you know, it's all about who's left holding the bag. You know, I mean, that's not just a Trump thing. That's an everybody thing that's in that business, and that's the way they conduct it. But aside from that, you know, just the ability to you know, just have conversations with normal people, it doesn't exist. And there's this whole judgment, this whole "I'm better than you" feeling that comes out in articles like the one you're citing, that Jessica Digler article.
Well, the only thing I can say about,
you know, these people don't know what's good for them.
Yeah, I mean, they don't realize how good this all is, these numbers. And I honestly, you know, I know I beat up on this probably more than I ought to, but I'll tell you what. When you put with one of the side benefits to what the Fed has done in the last 5 years, again, now, whether COVID, would I have done some of it? Probably, you know, all those kinds of things. But one of the side benefits to people in office is because you still value stuff on the dollar, which is worth less than when you started. All the other numbers are useless, and I do mean that, useless. You can't say, unless you are very rigid in your honesty. I'll go through this from the start. When you talk about a GDP, you're talking about the total value in dollars of goods and services in this country. And then you're supposed to say, well, there's something called the deflator, which says, okay, the dollar has gone down 3% in value, meaning the same thing as inflation's been 3%. We're gonna discount the increase. So if the total value of everything people do is up 4% and the inflation is 3%, the net is 1. Okay, you can't say it's 4 because 3% of it is the decrease in the value of what you're measuring it with. I'll bet not 5% of the population, maybe 10, maybe I'm being grumpy, has any idea what I just said. Yet it should be economics taught in fifth grade, for God's sake, maybe eighth grade. And so if all you have to do is lie on the deflator and say inflation's really 6%, which means we're in a 2% hole, but no, let's just say it's 2% and we're in 2%, we're winning. Okay, well, you can get away with that for a while, which we have, by the way. When I say we, the government, both people in office have, everybody since really George Bush has. But now people are going, wait a minute. Even though I don't have the intelligence, the data to bitch at the numbers yesterday or today, all I know is they keep saying that these numbers are here, and yet they're telling me in the last 20 years things are up 18%, and it sure looks to me like they've doubled. And you have examples all over the place of them doubling. You get this feeling, same subject we're talking about, Kevin, you're getting this feeling not only does the Bureau of Labor Statistics not working for me. By the way, the Justice Department doesn't seem to be working for me. The local police don't seem to be working for me. What am I doing here? I mean, it's really a bad situation for... And it's not like we're Switzerland, which, you know, again, I have nothing against Switzerland. I'd love to go there someday. But we're freaking America. If we fold, I got to believe the world folds with us. We have a responsibility not just to ourselves, I think. We can't be a bunch of idiots, because how many other places are going to go down if we do? This morning I go pick...
And define fold, in your opinion. What do you... When you
just
say
because
fold, what do you mean
an economic mess where we no longer can balance our own books, we can no longer help anybody else, to where the dollar splinters apart, to where there's all kinds of wacky currencies on the world stage where people are doing business in. I mean, there's stuff that America has done to the world that is unprecedented since Roman times, for God's sake. Everybody around the world could count on the dollar. A peasant, well, I hate to use that term, but that's what they call them over there, a peasant in Russia could amass $500 bills from America, and he knew he had a storehouse of value. Now he doesn't. I think people have no, unless you really think about it, I mean, I'm not calling people dumb, they're not, have no knowledge of just how important America has been to people for the last 75 years. I mean, monetarily, militarily.
Well, in fact, throughout the educational system, you have a lot of places where the message is quite to the contrary.
Well, we're not perfect,
America,
but
America has been terrible to the world.
We're surely not perfect, okay. And you know I will be the first to say that a lot of times our CIA, our military, is really the arm of big American big business other places, but you still can't negate the stuff we've meant to the world. What if every oil transaction wasn't in a dollar? What kind of chaos would that be, Kevin?
Well, we may find out.
Yeah, we may find out. But I don't want to find out.
We've got countries that are trying to push off the dollar.
I mean, my nephew's adorable little daughter was 2 years old last week. I don't want her going through a life like that. That kind of chaos every day. Do you? I mean...
Well, and so you... I guess we could vote socialist.
Here's the thing.
Here's the thing about socialism. Historically speaking, it's real easy to vote it in. You can always vote it in. You never vote it out.
We came very, very close, by the way, during the 30s, that a lot of people don't realize. Our system was not working. Everybody thinks that we went into the Depression, everybody stayed staunch capitalist, and we just all of a sudden one day came out from because we're that good. None of that's true. A lot of people were wondering if another system was better than this one, because this one was broken. And it was broken in kind of the same way we're breaking it now. Only 1% of the people had all the dough. It was worse then than now, but we're getting there. Try and tell somebody who went to a bank and all their life savings was just gone that some other system wasn't worth a try. How do you tell them that? This one ain't working so hot. It's like this article, right?
But as I just said, though, there is no such thing as a try.
Well, I mean...
It's a change. And it's a change that, you know, in as we look at the world historically, because it does require that when you start doing this, and we're well down this road, I think, that when you start down this road to, you know, a socialist structure, it requires the government to be able to confiscate. It requires the government to be able to, you know, to dictate more, because it's all done in the name of fairness and equity. And so the more power you give it, it's going to resist any removal. It doesn't work with just free choice, because a lot of people are going to blow off the dictates of the government. So if you want a government that is that powerful, and you want an economy that is that centralized, then basically you are giving up that a large measure of freedom. And there's no looking back once you do it. Unless you want to get into violent revolutions.
You're never going to get me to argue that the socialist system is better than the free enterprise system. I mean, I could never do that after 20 years on the trading floor. It's not in my, you know, it's not in my DNA, Kevin. But I think I could make a pretty solid argument, even to you, that a well-governed socialist system like Sweden is, in terms of everyday life, could be a lot better than the crony capitalism, violent crap we have now. In terms of everyday life, you compared somebody, trials and tribulations in Sweden with people here, I don't know that we're doing so much better. Now, I don't think what we have now...
But I do think Sweden is very grudgingly, and over a lot of bureaucrats' dead bodies, has started to move away from it, because it doesn't work for everybody.
I think I could probably one-up you on a competitive society, a free and competitive society versus socialism. I mean, hell, you know, I spent many years studying that. I just don't recognize what our society is now. I mean,
well, I agree, and as I just said, I think we're well down that road.
But I don't think we're on the road to socialism. We're on the road to God knows what.
We're on the road to centralized government, a government-centered economy, and an overabundance of bureaucratic state making the rules.
I'm going to. Can I lob a third one in there? We're not going socialist. We're sure as hell not competitive in most places. I think why, I'll ask you, why is this discussion between socialism and capitalism when there's a third one? Fascism. And I'm not talking about, loading boxcars with people. I'm talking about an economic system. We're going to have an economic system here. We're going right for it. Lou and Kyle, to a certain extent, are right on it. We're going to have three or four businesses in every industry with their nose firmly up the ass of government. That's right where we're going. And that's not either socialism or capitalism. That's where we're headed.
All right. I'll buy it. Tom, I'll totally buy that. So we don't have to call it socialism, but what we do call it is... an economy driven by by the government,
right?
Basically.
But that economy is not, well, in theory, again, in some countries seem to make it work. In theory, socialism means everybody gets to go to school, everybody gets health care. Well, we know, you and I know, that isn't always the way it works. Fascism doesn't care about anything like that. They just care about where all the money is.
Well, and that's not working in many socialist countries. All the examples, Bernie Sanders likes to talk about the great healthcare system in Cuba. Not true.
Cuba?
Yeah.
Do they have any healthcare system in Cuba?
They do not have a healthy population.
Well, and I don't know if you've watched this, and I haven't gone through this totally here, but the last... headline number yesterday for the producer price index, final demand increased 1% in July, 0.1 in July, seasonally adjusted, whatever that means, The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reported today, final demand prices rose 0.2% in June and were unchanged in May. On an unadjusted basis, the index for final demand advanced 2.2% for the 12 months in July. Well, of course, if you're doing 12 months, it should be unadjusted, right? Or they should match up. However, check this out. The July rise in the index for the final demand can attribute the prices for final demand for goods, which moved up 0.6%. In contrast, the index for final demand services fell 0.2%. How much can you gloat about a 0.6% rise in goods? And yet we gloated all day. Did they not? They just look at the one number on TV and where the market.
You know what? I was tied up all day, so I didn't get a chance to look at the report. So that's 0.6 month to month.
Yeah.
Seems pretty high to me.
Yeah, well, and I think I'm going to do this off the top of my head, but I think the service part of the industry now is actually bigger than the goods and goods stuff. Now we've talked on the show a lot regarding, I use the word shockflation. You got a better one maybe, but where some of the stuff where if you haven't had a plumber in 10 years and all of a sudden you have a plumber come over, you go, say what? When you look at the bill, right? I mean, but people don't necessarily, well, not everybody, but I mean, I'm going to say most people, that's wrong too. Because everybody goes to the barber, everybody probably gets their teeth clean. You're somewhat attuned to services, but you're really more attuned to goods, right, on a daily basis? You would think.
Well, you are until you go get your oil changed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a...
And then you know, you go to a Jiffy Lube or someplace like that, and it's $100.
Well, you know, that you just brought up something. We're going to go to break here, but if you're doing the Consumer Price Index, how would you... And again, I criticize it all the time, but I also am very, well, try to be aware of how hard it is to do this thing. I mean, my new truck I got, I went out and my guy's doing the oil change. I went and got this, I was reading up that people really feel that if you use the high-end synthetic oil, that over a period of 100,000 miles, your engine is in way better shape. These are mechanics and whatever. So I used to use the better grade. So next time I'm going to go the other route. Now, if I use that, and it's, of course, whatever, $6 or $7 a quart instead of $3 or $4. Now, how do I put that in the CPI when everybody says I only have to get my oil changed every 4,500 miles instead of 3,000 or whatever it is, 5,000 instead of 3,000? There is some improvement there where the $7 really isn't double to 3.5, right? So there is some, if I was doing the report.
Yeah, I mean, I know how actually that's kind of an easy example in many ways, because that's the one where you say, you can do it as a miles per quart of oil or something like that, measurement.
Yeah, but I'm saying how many zillion things in the Consumer Price Index are like that? But then you get to the point where
you have to look at all those details. You know, if you really want to understand it, you have to understand all of the detail behind it, because some things are just going to be the nominal change, and other things are going to be the, I don't want to call it adjusted, because that's not really adjusted, but it's the calculated change.
You have to get a word for that. But I found this once, Kevin, and I can't find it again. I'm sure it's in there, because everything's there someplace. I found over a decade, this probably was 2020 I did this, over a decade, the F-150, which is kind of the lead pickup truck in there, right? So over a 10-year period, they added, I'm not sure, is it air conditioning became standard or automatic transmission became? Every year they had an adjustment to the point where after a decade, in their opinion, even though the price of the truck was up like 30 or 40%, maybe not that much, maybe 25%, that it was the same price. Now, at some point, you got to sit there and go, wait a minute, it's still a truck. And, when you start talking about, government, I think government, sensors on your tire pressure, sensors on your alignment, maybe even a backup camera, which, by the way, I think I'd like, but that would be you know, my decision, I think. But all that stuff, leather heated seats, all those kinds of things, which I don't friggin' need. At the end of the day, the truck still cost me 30% higher. You can't tell me it's the same price. And what if I'm some guy that all I do is get in the damn thing and drive to my work site, or I use it on the farm? I don't need all that crap. You're making me buy it, and you're telling me it's the same price. No, it's not. I mean, these things are actually hard to define, aren't they?
Right. So there's again, two ways you can do it. Let's take the air conditioning example. I can go back, and I can look at what the cost of a car with air conditioning was when it was not standard, and compare that to the cost of a car when air conditioning is standard. Backup cameras a little bit different because they didn't exist upon a time. So that's a little bit different. But, you know, I can normalize some of that stuff retroactively. But what you're saying is, look, I just want to know what it costs me to drive to work. And what it costs me to drive to work now compared to 20 years ago, to 40 years ago, to 5 years ago, is probably a more relevant cost to the average person.
Well, plus,
am I stating what you're saying?
Yeah, and I'm gonna be real ignorant here before we go to break. When cars were safe to crack up at 30 miles an hour, everybody wants 60, right? So we put airbags and other stuff in there, and they're, I guess, relatively safe to crack up at 55. Now everybody goes 90. Without being policed. What have we done? Have we gained here or not?
What have we done? Well, I tell you what, let's do the break, because we got to do the break, and then you and I got to regroup and get back to arguing with each other instead of agreeing.
Yeah, it's
no fun.
This is no bull. This is bull. SP Futures up 75 cents. That's why I'm not so anxious to go to break. There's nothing going on. NASDAQ Futures up 375. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. We have Kevin O'Neill with us, and we have Andrew on the board. I did not see this stuff about the Japanese Prime Minister stepping down. We have to maybe Russell's all over that, because he's our Far East dude. Dow futures down 11. Really nothing going anywhere here that I can see, as you would expect before a big number. Every time this CPI is labeled a big number, I seem to recall that between 1984. And probably 2020, the distance of, how many years is that? 36 years, it was the world's smallest report. Nobody gave a crap. And all of a sudden, it's back. Every dog has its day again, I guess. We're in Europe, the DAX up 64.4%, FTSE up 18.2%, CAC round up 24.3%. UK inflation less than expected. UBS up 3.6%. I read last night that the inflation was more than expected, so they've changed the headline. We're in Asia. We had the Nikkei up 209. Was that a big move yesterday? It's 0.6%, 36,442. Hang Seng down 60, still above 17,000, 17,113. Shanghai down 17.6%. These guys cannot go anywhere. They're still stuck at this 2850, and they cannot move. Anyway, the not sure what the politics are there. Maybe Russell has some insight there as well. 10-year rate minus 2 basis points, 3.83. The Bund up 2 basis points, 2.20. Japan down 3 basis points, 0.81. Oil down 18 cents, 78-17. Still kind of in the lower middle of this range. I'm going to say the range is now 75 to 83. So that's where they are. Brent down 9 cents, 80-60. Still have people calling for Brent to be 150, but they've been calling for that for a while. I don't see that happening. Natural gas up 2 cents, 217. RBOB down a penny, 235. Yesterday, big day. Dow was up 408, S&P up 90, NASDAQ up 407. That's almost 2.5%. It's a big day. Gold, 540, 2513, hanging over 2500. Again, this is the December contract, the August contract, which goes out this week, I believe, is 2468. There's like a $50 premium, which, since there's, I'll explain this some other day, but basically that's the cost of interest and storage, and that's why your future is always higher. Silver up 14 cents, 27.93. Copper up 2 cents, 407. I won't say always, I'll say most of the time. Foreign exchange, the euro up to 110, so it's actually a little stronger today. British pound 128, again, it was a little stronger than yesterday morning. Japanese yen 146.91, so that's the high end. They got up to 143. Again, be careful. The euro and the British are dollars per pound, and the yen is yens per dollar. So as to why they do it that way, I don't know, but you got to be careful when you do that. Now, crypto, 639, 61,395. Where a week ago Monday, it traded 50. So it's the last 6 or 7 days, it's been flying back up. Andrew, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
All right. It is Wednesday, August 14th, 6:44 here in Chicago. Starting off with a little bit of sports, we have some losses from our favorite baseball teams. The Cubs lost to the Guardians 1-2. The White Sox lost to the Yankees 1-4. And the Diamondbacks won over the Rockies 4-3.
The Rockies are pretty hapless.
Yeah, we got something there. But over to Chicago weather, it is currently 64 degrees. We're going to have some clouds and some sun throughout the day. We're going to have a high of 81 degrees. And over in Phoenix, they're currently at 92 degrees. They're going to have a high of 108. And they're going to have a pretty warm day with plenty of sunshine. Now, finally, for Chicago traffic, on the major expressways, traffic is building, especially on the Kennedy, right about near Lawrence Avenue. Same thing on the Eisenhower. Expect delays both on the inbound and the outbound near Central Avenue. Only major thing to report is, I think we passed it on the way to the Stocks and Jocks station, but Green Street between Randolph Street and Lake Street is closed due to a serious fire. Level 2 hazmat. Flames from an electrical vault fire are reaching the surface. We could see the smoke coming in, so that is all I got.
There you
back
go.
Back to you, Chief.
So you had a field report. You should have asked to get out of the truck and run over there and done a, with the microphone and everything and done a thing and hightailed it in for the show.
I was peering over, and it's good to see actually something happen, and then it's in the news for once, because I always feel like I see or hear things in Chicago, and then it's never mentioned again.
Well, isn't that the truth? How's that out of the mouth of producers, Kevin? Isn't that the truth?
You see something? Let's get him out there for a live remote report. Bottom of there, top of the hour. We got it.
How about if we get on the police thing at night? We got to, Andrew, you got to dig through the archives, or we got to call Matt Weber. I forget what that guy's name is. We got to get him back on, Kevin. Remember him? The guy who did the murders at night? The shootings?
Nope, don't remember.
Well, it was a while ago. We had him on 2-3 times, and one night he called us from like a murder scene, and he would listen to the. That's why the news is so screwed up. I mean, it's a. We talk about whether it's biased or not, but whether it's even there or not, he would actually listen to the police band at night. And we must have slept during the day, I guess. And if there was a murder, he'd go out and cover it, do the story, and then. And I said to him on the air, I bleeped up. I said, so you're with the Tribune, right? And he goes, no. I'm not with anybody. I go out and do this, and I try to sell it to somebody. They don't have anybody. So there. Now, if it's downtown or something, you might see people out here, like when they had shootings in front of our office. But that was like 8 or 9 people. That was a big story. But a regular old murder somewhere, the guy drives in the hood by himself and gets out and tries to interview some people, and I don't know if he's got a tape recorder or what he does, takes notes and tries to make up a story and tries to get in the morning paper. And he's a free agent. And he says there's never anybody else there from like the time. And I got a regular old murder. How bad does that sound, Kevin? Just a regular old. If it's not something that it's not 5 people or 10 people or something, he goes, there's nobody there. One night he was, We hear him in the background. We hear the police say, "Hey, I'm over there." Okay, just on the air. Anyway.
Oh, in my days covering basketball, I'd run into stringers a lot. You know, who didn't work for anybody, but they were kind of independent contractors. But they were hired to go cover the game. It wasn't like they'd do a game story and then see who would buy it. Is you know, the AP or somebody like that would get them to go over there and sit, you know, get them a credential and have them sit there. So that's as close as my exposure ever got to it.
Remember Taylor Bell?
Sure.
Well, for those,
I covered high school sports. Yeah,
and he was in the Sun Times, and he was the absolute guru of high school sports, right? And but one of my buddies from Pullman, a guy named Bob Poshek, who I believe is a listener of the show, terrific guy. He was a stringer for Taylor Bell, and he would every Friday night. Bob loved to go to a high school game, and he just loved basketball. So he would go, and I think you would have to. Taylor Bell wanted like three or four things. He wanted the score, who was the leading scorer, you know, if there was a star, how he did. It was like essentially a three line report, and I think he went to the payphone on the side of the gym, and I don't know if it was an 800 number or what it was, but you called in and gave him the report for, you know, Sidewash against Slippery Rock or somebody, and
Proviso against somebody, yeah.
And that's where Taylor Bell got. I mean, it was long before the internet or anything like that. So you had people doing stuff, and Bob was happy. I don't think he got paid, Kevin. Maybe he did. I doubt it. If he did, what could it be? $20 a game, maybe.
Maybe.
I don't think he got paid.
I remember when it was always a big deal if Taylor Bell was going to cover our game this week, and we'd get them every once in a while because I played in the Catholic League, and all our games were on Sundays, so we didn't, you know, we were the only high schools playing Sunday afternoon games, and as a result, Taylor, we weren't competing with every other public school in the Chicago area, or for that matter, all the suburban Catholic schools too. It was all the city schools, so. You know, we'd get them a couple of times a year, and it was a big deal because if you win the game, the star of the game, which was not me, the star of the game would get an interview and some quotes in the paper from Taylor Bell.
What if you, like, fumbled twice or something? Now, do you get them?
I don't know. That was not me either because they would never give me the ball.
My cousin, real quick story, and we'll get back to the markets. My cousin went to Tilden Tech. I probably told people the story before. And he was a freshman when Johnny Kerr was a senior. Tilden Tech was a huge school at that time. And they I'm going to say 1,600, 2,000, all guys, I think. He said, the freshman football, so many people went out for practice, they just did sprints. And if you were like, weren't the top two or three guys in the sprints, you got cut like the first day. So my cousin is like, I don't know what he was lollygagging or what he was doing. He gets cut immediately, right? So his first day, he's gone. Well, my uncle, who played 12 years of professional ball, not in the NFL, but in one of the other leagues that was competing at the time, knows the coach, you know, Chicago, of course. So all of a sudden, my cousin gets a note in class, and he goes, report to practice this afternoon. So my uncle, I guess, called the coach and said, what are you doing? That Carson kid is probably one of the fastest kids in the school. I've seen him play. All right, I'll give him a try. Well, of course, this is on a Tuesday. By Saturday, he's a starting halfback, right? So he ends up going to Colorado on a ride with the quarterback. And the quarterback gets out there. This is before NIL, right? They're rooming, and they get their room. They're unpacking their crap. And all of a sudden, the quarterback gets a phone call, and he goes, I'm going to Missouri. You with me? My cousin goes, I just got here. I don't even know where Missouri is. So the guy leaves. He's there without a buddy. Anyway, he's not starting as a sophomore. And then in those days, you went both ways. So some guy gets hurt, and they put him in to play cornerback. So the sweep comes around that side. He's this linebacker, nails this guy. Coughs up the ball like, you know, a foot and a half in the air. It's on the ground. He says, I did what you're never supposed to do. I pick up the ball, and I run 90 yards. And the next day, he said I was in for like three plays. The next day, the headline was, Carson beats Missouri. He goes, I was in for three plays. And the linebacker's the guy who made the play, not me. Nobody even mentioned him. That's the news, Kevin.
That is the news.
But how do you mention Taylor Bell and how much effort they used to do to get all these games? Now, what do they do now? There's somebody there just text something in or what?
Oh, I think all the scores are online, so.
All right, well.
The school's athletic departments, I'm sure, are very happy to just enter in what happened online, a box score and everything.
Well, Kevin, let's get back to these numbers that are, like, coming out today. I don't know that, I honestly don't know the end game here. The stuff that we point out, and a lot of people point out, we're not the only people that see it, the stuff that we point out where the CPI has been, shall we say, slow the last 4 or 5 years, do you think it's, for whoever is going to be the new president, do you think it's just slow? So next year or the year after, even if there's no inflation, it's all of a sudden going to percolate through and it says we have inflation when we don't, which actually is what happened at the end of the Volcker era, or it's just going to be buried forever. We're going to think that rent prices are up 20% when they're up 45%, and we're just going to go with it forever. I mean, I don't know what the answer to that is. Do you?
No.
I mean, I don't know how you... Is it? They don't seem to have any sort of look back whatsoever and say, okay, for the last 4 years we have rent up 25%. Well, look, here's 15 places where it used to be 1,200, now it's 2,400. Are we just going to go with that number, or are we just going to hope it buries? And how do you never catch up? I mean, if you're...
Well, because when you don't catch up, you can't deal with the situation. I'm not suggesting that government has the... should be the solution to rising prices, rising rents, and all of that kind of stuff, other than money supply related stuff that they're charged to manage. But what I am suggesting is that if you're going to lie about what the price level, then how do you understand how we got there? And, you know, how did we get there in the housing market? Oh, I don't know. We probably shut down the economy. We made it less desirable to live in the city, so we bid up the price of suburban housing so that people could go outside and actually do things, except in the suburbs where they would report you for being outside without a mask on. And then we put a moratorium on rent so that anybody who didn't pay couldn't be evicted. So we caused all of the small landlords, we put them under incredible strain in many cases, didn't have the cash flow to maintain it. So a whole lot of property got transferred to real estate companies, large corporations. And everybody, of course, has an investment model then, and they want to make sure that they recover all of that rent that they couldn't collect before, so it gets baked into the future rents, and this whole thing goes on and on and on. And if we're going to deny what actually happened, then how are we going to evaluate policy as we go forward? Because we sure screwed a lot of people with all that COVID nonsense.
Well, yeah, and
a lot of average people, and we continue to screw them with everything that was done.
Well, and when you talk about rents, and I obviously have a few people in my building that rent, and it's so crazy. You can't, and I'm not saying you should, and I don't want to go down this road too far, but you got to be careful when you can tell somebody, I don't want you to get in the place. You don't like the looks of them or whatever. You can't really say that anymore, even though it's your place. You surely can't do it on basis of race or anything like that, and nor should you. But you can put in your ads something like, need 800 credit score, need income three times rent per month. You can do stuff that ends up way worse than you just telling somebody to go scratch. I mean, I know some people that, I'm not talking about Odd because she doesn't do a lot of rentals, because I would never get this from her. But I mean, I've heard stories that people are, the rent's $3,000 and they want somebody making $9,000 a month. Well, how many people make $9,000 a month? I mean, it's kind of a lot. I mean,
that's a healthy salary.
And an 800 credit score to get into your place? Oh, okay. And maybe you want 2-3 months, security to pay. I've heard of people that have offered to pay rent in advance for a whole year and they won't let them in because they don't like the looks of them, or they don't have the right credit score. Not that they don't like the looks of them. You can't do that. Anyway, I don't know if you saw this one. We have a few minutes, Kevin. I just want your opinion on this. There's nothing we can do about it. But Chicago, and I didn't read. There's got to be some there's got to be some detail of this that I don't necessarily have. Maybe I just didn't want to look for. 2023, Chicago's population is down to where it was in 1920. We're down to 2,000,006, and in 2000, we were 2,896. We tippy tap. When do you think we tapped out?
We're 2,000,006 now.
Yeah.
Oh, the city had to top out 5, 6, something like that.
No, I'm talking just the city itself, not the area. The area is still like...
The area was like 7 once.
Yeah, it still is, I think. I think the area still is almost as big, but 1950, we tapped out at 3.62. And between 1950 and 1960, 3.55. You know what I'm going to say was the total difference there, Kevin? This is one coming from as you know, I like infrastructure. Where do you think I'm going with this?
I don't have any idea where you're going with it.
How many people did we displace building the Dan Ryan and the Kennedy and the Eisenhower? I'll bet way over 100,000. I'll bet that's almost the entire drop between 50 and 60.
Okay, I'll buy that.
Dan Ryan, there was more people were moved in building the Dan Ryan Expressway than any other project in this country ever, except for the Tennessee Valley Authority. Isn't that scary?
Yeah.
But we were 2000. We were up almost to 2,000,009, and we've dropped. Now the question is, who's leaving? The last time I went through the detail was a lot of people in the black community just couldn't live in some of these areas. And they're empty. They're heading south suburbs or heading south. The jobs aren't necessarily there. Now we have kind of a drain of, I think, some richer people because of the taxes.
One question is who's leaving. The second question is where are they going?
I think the people who are leaving the South Side are just going anywhere they can. That's just one man's opinion.
Are they going to the suburbs, or are they leaving the state?
Well, when they're going to the...
And that's a question. I know you might not have an answer at the ready.
Actually,
I really think that's the relevant question.
I can give you an answer, but it needs to be a two-part answer. When I was in high school, and one of the reasons why Marist, every story, you know, when you give me, there's always a long story. When I was at Marist High School, it was all guys, right? And then they drew from this whole south suburb area, Riverdale, Harvey. We had buses coming from all those places. Those places have become virtually all African-American now, when they weren't in those days. So I think a lot of the African-Americans on the South Side have moved to the South Suburbs. Chicago Heights has got to be 80-90% black now, when it used to be probably 20%. So the question is not only where did they go, but then where did the people who used to live in Riverdale and Chicago Heights go? That I have no idea. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's an interesting, very interesting response, because it does layer on there like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just that... Okay, well, 80,000 people moved from Inglewood to the south suburbs. Okay, are these all new houses, or did 80,000 people leave the south suburbs? I think 80,000 people left the south suburbs. Now, where the hell they went, I have no idea. You know, we're talking about areas of the city that look like some of the pictures from, you know, Akron or those places. You know, there's where the Robert Taylor Homes are. The people don't know Robert Taylor Homes was this huge housing project. How many high rise do you think they're worth, Kevin? 20? 25?
Taylor Homes? Oh, yeah, I'll bet, yeah.
They went basically from just south of Sox Park to maybe, what, 43rd Street or something? And I'm going to say every one of those buildings was probably, what, 20, 25 stories high?
Yeah.
It had to be, what did you say, 3,000 people? 2,000 in each building? I don't know how you count it up. Say 1,500? They're all down and gone. That entire length, if you take the Rock Island down, there is one One person has put up this huge sports facility, and hopefully a lot of people get to use it. And there's still a couple of schools hanging there, nobody in them. It's all just grass. There's not a speck. There's not a thought of one house going up there, Kevin. And we're talking about between the tracks and State Street has to be, it's not a half a mile, but it's three blocks. So you're talking about a third of a mile at least times a mile and a half or two. I'd say, Kevin, we're talking about how many square miles that aren't even don't have a soul on them. They used to have 30,000, 40,000 people. That's a dent. At least where Cabrini Green used to be, there's other people living there. Not as dense, but there's other people living there. Southside, there's nobody. Where's our buddy Coach Leahy for urban economics? I'd love to go take a class again on the modern urban stuff. It's got to be a lot different than when we took it in college, isn't it?
It does. And the one thing I'd say is that most of that stuff that turns over and turns into dead space ultimately winds up being developed. I mean, we've seen it at some point. I mean, what was South Loop? I don't know, 30 years ago.
I'm going to...
It's where I parked for free when I worked at the exchange.
Yeah, there we go.
Good morning.
Thank you, Russell. Good morning.
No problem. I'd go in a little bit early if I needed my car after work, and basically, there was a whole lot of empty space that nobody paid attention to, and you could just shove your car down there.
Yeah. Well, as somebody
one day we decided to develop it, and now it's a completely mm-hmm. different part of the city. So I think there is some incentive somewhere for all of that clear out to happen. And it's not like, well, clear out because the bulldozers for construction are the first wave is the bulldozers that are going to knock everything down, followed by, you know, tomorrow the bulldozers are going to be here or all the other construction equipment to start building up. There's a period of time where it sits, but I got to believe that there's a lot of intent behind this.
Kevin, it's sort of like it would be the truth. As Robin and I, the late Robin, and I did some construction way early on. I don't remember if you knew that. We did remodeling.
I remember.
And it's, where can I go with this? It's a family show. It's sort of like comedy and sex. Timing is everything, right? I knew people when Robin bought her place in DePaul in maybe 77. The area was not so hot. I mean, the north side was not nice. Lincoln Park was not what you think it is now. And I go, Robin, what are you doing over here, basically? Well, you know what? Her timing was perfect. Her block, the tradesmen's vans were on. The next year, they're in the next block. They never looked back. In five, 6 years, the area was fine. You didn't have to worry about going to the L, nothing. She caught the timing just right. Now, other people, like the people in, what's the area around Damon and Wicker Park? Dr. J had a girlfriend and a friend of hers. One got a place over there after this had been going on for a while. And they were at the edge of what I'll call the frontier. And you know what? It was a decade before they weren't the frontier. And they would get robbed once a month. You know, I mean, it was all of a sudden it'll stop for 10 years, and then all of a sudden it starts again. Where the economy, it's like downtown construction. Russell knows. You'll see 15 high rises go up, and then you won't see another one for a decade. It's very spotty. And the timing, you talk about the South Loop. South Loop got to where it was, and I'm going to say it didn't move another block for 3 decades. It probably still isn't moving very much. Larry has a buddy who bought a place down on, what do they call it, the Old Prairie Avenue, the big, huge mansions. There was a condominium there, and he bought it, I'm going to say, 15 years ago, and he moved out like 3 years ago. He was still a block from the hood. It ended where he was, which is kind of on the very south end of the area we're talking about. So you sort of have to be careful on your timing. Just saying.
Well, and in Chicago, historically, anyway, I don't know that this is so true anymore, but in Chicago, whatever the demarcation street was every bit as good as a wall.
Oh, yeah.
that it just never spilled over. I don't think that's true anymore.
No, not at all. I think there
was a time where, you know, if Western Avenue was the border for neighborhoods, then, you know, nobody from one side of Western Avenue ever went to the other side of Western Avenue.
I'm going to say now those borders are almost the same, but they're economic, they're not racial.
Okay.
Anyway, Kevin, I got to pump.
Yep, so Russell, thank you for dropping in. I'll enjoy listening to you, and Tom, I'll see you guys on Friday.
Yep. Russell, welcome. How are you? You sound good?
I'm good. It's funny, Kevin, through the I'm getting ready to tell a short personal story, because you do, so
that's
I get
fine.
It.
Go ahead.
What was this past weekend?
With the Air and Water Show.
30 years ago, Saturday of the Air and Water Show, Chicago.
You got married.
Here's the fun part, and my dad's name was actually Dusty Rhodes, believe it or not.
Really?
And Dusty, as we got within, signal range of WBBM, we listened to the whole Air and Water Show on the drive up without actually seeing the damn thing.
Wow. You know, one of these years...
From Memphis, and I moved from Memphis.
One of these years before...
But it was 30... I've been a Chicagoan for 30 years now.
Wow.
And since I'm not over 60, that's a little bit over half my life.
Well, you know, next year, if we're both about, you know what I'd like to do? I'd like to take the truck and let's shoot down to Gary, where they all land and take off, and kind of watch it from there. I bet that's fascinating.
Oh, I would love to do that. That would be awesome. I thought they came from all over.
No, they used to use Glen. What's the one that's now houses in
Northside?
Glenwood Naval Air Station, Glencoe.
Yeah,
and that's long closed. Hey, we need to find out about what's going on over in Japan and all kinds of stuff with you today. The premier is stepping down. They're having issues. And I also want your professorial opinion on. I was talking to Kenny about it yesterday. Kenny was back on yesterday. Sounded great. Nvidia, again, and I'm not going to try and price Nvidia, and I'm sure as hell not going to tell people where to buy or sell it. But when a stock would 24 billion shares outstanding trades 99 and change last Monday, and now it's 118. We're talking close to $500 billion in market cap. I'm going to say 5 years ago, was there a company, 10 years ago, was there even a company worth $500 billion? How can you have that kind of volatility in a week?
Definitely not 10 years ago, yeah.
How can you, is this healthy or not? We're flying down, flying up. My experience in the market, just by being here, says that's not healthy. That you got to be careful.
I'm gonna give a weird analogy that I've been kind of formulating, and it's not fully formulated, which can make me interesting. The whole semiconductor thing. Semiconductors, and we kind of figured this out during COVID. They're one of those things that are basically needed by a wide variety of industries, and they're one of the things that kind of makes the whole economic engine go in this day and age, in the information age. And the entities that used to do that back in the 70s and 80s and became behemoth companies were oil companies. And I know there's a lot more specialization that goes into semiconductors, but, you know, oil companies used to be the ones that the market caps dwarfed everything else.
Exxon was the biggest company for a while, right?
And it's funny, I'm working from a little bit of memory here, but I remember once seeing a listing of the large, you know, what was the largest as far as market cap goes by decade. And like in the 70s, the oil companies just absolutely dominated the stock market. And, you know, I feel like that's where we've kind of gotten with the technology stock. So I know the numbers are absolutely incredible, but within context, as a percentage of the overall market cap of the stock market, I don't think is outrageous as it sounds when you just talk about the stock by itself.
If you look at the seven, they're right where the seven were in 2000 before we crashed. about 45% of the NASDAQ.
So yeah, so that you gave a better stat to back up what I was trying to back into, which is, you know, that the energy got, you know, Exxon, it was before, it was Exxon and Mobil was a separate company, and all those, I think there were seven big oil companies at one time.
They were called the Seven Sisters, remember?
Yeah. So there you go. Maybe the key number for a dominant group of stocks, and we got to figure out what's going to be the next seven.
Well, I just, here's a,
I think I just came up with my forecasting firm's name. Next seven.
Everybody who, that's what I love, the guys that are on this, they're on this show,
but
because
again, where I'm going is, I don't think that the valuation is completely out of control considering the necessity behind what they make.
Okay, but I'll lob this one at you. As you know, immediately, whenever you say something, it drags me into another question. That's why you're so.
Uh-huh.
That's why I love you, man.
I know. I will never let you stop.
Yeah. The difference between Exxon being the most valued company, and I'm not saying people go out and buy Exxon, versus, let's say, Meta.
Mm-hmm.
Or something, or even Nvidia for that matter, or Exxon, when they were the number one company in terms of valuation, I'm going to say their PE was probably 10,
mm-hmm.
Or maybe even better. Their assets on their balance sheet were massive. I mean, everything they owe,
yeah,
in terms of rigs, in terms of gas stations, in terms of wells, in terms of property, no matter what, even if you didn't all of a sudden didn't like Exxon and they stopped losing some money, there was, quote, I'll use the term of a traditional value there. And
there was a tangible value.
Yeah, and I remember, yeah, in the two.
And I'm sure that the tangible value of a lot of brick and mortar type of companies, it might be higher than Nvidia right now.
Well, but I'm saying, but remember in the 2000 era, when we were, this is all running up in 1999, I'm standing in the OEX pit, and uh-huh, the guys would joke that they had some, you know, some dot bomb company, they showed this big high rise. And the guy goes, I bet they're renting, and they rented the sign.
They don't own that building.
Yeah, they don't. they probably rented the sign. All right, you brought it up. I'll give you the, who are the Seven Sisters? Come on, you can name some of these.
Oh, gosh. Let's see. Amoco. Really? Oh, what, you have it in front of you right now?
Yeah, well, of course. How can I quiz you if I don't know the answer?
Is BP not one of them?
No, they weren't even here. Standard Oil Company in New Jersey, which became Exxon.
What year are you talking
this
about?
This is the original Seven Sisters. It has to be like in the 70s or something. They were Standard Oil Company in New Jersey. They became Exxon. Remember, they weren't always Exxon. Standard Oil, yeah, Company in New York, which was Saucony, that became Mobil, or they were number two. Then they merged with Exxon. Standard Oil of California, which used to be SoCal, and now became Chevron. Texas Oil Company, which became Texaco, and then Gulf Oil, which merged with somebody. Those were the seven. But now we're like,
yeah,
half of them are together.
That's in 1928.
I don't know if it was 28, but it was a while ago.
28? What?
It was a while ago. Union Oil California, I think, was in there too. But now they're all like two companies. And then BP bought, Standard Oil in New Jersey's got, and Indiana, which became Amoco. So all, when they broke up Standard Oil, they all became Standard Oils, right? There was Standard Oil of Ohio, Standard Oil of New Jersey, New York. It was like when they broke up Illinois, when they broke up Bell, right? The phone company, AT&T. They became, you know, it became Bell of Illinois, Bell of Ohio, all that stuff. Remember?
I totally remember. Actually, one of the early industries I covered as a stock analyst was telecommunications, and about 5 years after all of that happened.
Do they? Does anybody?
Didn't they all just kind of come back together too?
Well, yeah. Does anybody still remember when they broke apart? We were talking about old. They broke apart. Somebody put what I guess would have been an ETF together of all the, uh-huh, the things together. And those didn't last very long, did they? I don't think they did.
It wasn't an ETF. It was like an index.
Yeah. But I thought
the breakup was pre-ETF days.
But it was pre. But there was some way where you could give them your telephone stack, and they would keep all the little pieces, all the other stuff for you. Wasn't it? It was more than an index. Was it some kind of fund?
Well, it was like you know the dividend reinvestment programs.
Well, that's where I'm going with this. And my nephews, two nephews,
which
and
is,
niece.
I think there was something like that where you could have just, you know, instead of taking all those shares and putting them into it, you could kind of leave them with them and continue to have your dividends reinvest, et cetera.
Well, you know, part of
our... In all of them, like you're talking about.
Well, part of our theme for the show is, like, no good deed goes unpunished, right? When my two nephews and niece were born, I was a godfather to three of them. I still am, which is, you know, it's not a title you get rid of. I bought them a bunch of, telephone stock, because the dividend reinvestment program was actually, they would reinvest the dividends without cost for 95% of the market price. It was like the world's best deal. And if you wanted to, you could send in a $50 check and they'd buy you more for market price, no commissions. And this is before, you know, there was not much commissions. So my brother, you know, he's kind of happy as a clam. He's got this going for his kids. And all of a sudden, they break it apart. It became an absolute royal pain in the ass. He tried to keep it together and finally just sold them. Because, well, Ameritech went out of business, right? That became Lucent, that went poof. They were the most widely held stock in the country at the time, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Lucent was, yeah.
Well, it was Ameritech, wasn't it? Wasn't that that was essentially.
I believe they were the ones that took, like, their technology, you know, the division that was doing non-telecommunication stuff, but more technology-oriented, and spun it out there.
Western Electric was part of that, right?
I believe they were, too, yeah. There were lots of, I feel like there was another one that was kind of successful, and it's not coming to me at the moment.
Well, there was Bell South, I think, was one of the best ones. I don't know what they ended up being, but they were the ones I always used to trade when I had clients. Bell South was.
I know they were. When you say the best one, they were the one of the best performing ones too.
Yeah,
this was before 30 years ago when I was working as an analyst in Memphis. And needless to say, because we were in Memphis, we had a relatively large holding of Bell South.
Really?
Actually, we managed part of their pension fund. That's why we had so much exposure to them.
Wow. Well, good for you. All right, let's shift to 2024. Got CPI coming out today. Yesterday, everybody celebrated the hell out of the PPI, and I look at the numbers; they look so hot. But then again, it's all perceived. The goods number was lousy, and actually, it was predicted because last month it had a big drop in energy, and now this month, I guess the energy is kind of back. But where do you think we stand here? I mean, in just about everything we've got. Have you since last week? I won't say gotten a better handle, but.
I don't think we're out of the woods on inflation for sure.
What about the yen thing? Is that going to stop jumping all over the place? Is it settled down here, or was it just because yesterday there was a big?
Go ahead. I dig on it. The thing was not a cause of anything. The yen thing was kind of a reaction to some other things that were going on, but because the yen had been the getting out of the carry trade, it happened a while back very violently. And this was one of the trades that started to fall apart with a lot of different volatility which started with Powell talking and then kind of got fuel on the fire from our employment number. That was just one of a handful of trades that kind of unwound and unwound very quickly and unwound in a way that there wasn't enough liquidity to support the unwind. The one that was actually worse for some people was owning large cap being short small cap. If you recall.
Oh, yeah.
That big move, the Russell 2000, was totally a reaction to people getting out of a trade that had been working for some time. And so there, I mean, it, there were two or three other kind of high profile moves that were really nothing more than everybody was on the same side of the trade and they're moving out of the trade.
When you talk
so
about
I don't think the carry trade and which I put a lot of work into a paper about the carry trade with another professor, and then it just kind of turns out that this time it was more of a reaction, not a cause.
Well, that was the head. Of course, you know the headline number. When somebody says it in the morning, by the end of the day, everybody has to say it, right? Last week was
over and over again.
It was all about the carry trade. And then yesterday there was an article on CNBC regarding anybody thinks that the carry trade is over. If you had a guess, boy, this is a tough question. If you had a guess, let's say there's $100 billion in the carry trade, some number where people are borrowing money and borrowing in Japan at 1%, not doing the forward contract and investing here at higher than 1%. Mm-hmm. If the total number of guys doing that, when I say doing it, are not completing the forward contract, so they're just basically taking a shot that the yen's going to be there, same spot when they go back the other way. If it's $100 billion, how much do you think, quote, got unwound a week ago Monday? I mean, this guy is saying that to think that all, like 100, he didn't use a number, but to think that all of it's been unwound is crazy. I mean, it's probably some small percentage got unwound.
And it only takes a small percentage getting unwound to create a lot of volatility in the market. I got no idea I don't even want to venture a guess on, you know, what percentage of the outstanding positions got liquidated very quickly and all that in that fire sale. Really wouldn't even want to try to get, but the carry trade's been, you know, as I listened to an expert on the carry trade on my drive back from IU yesterday, and he said the carry trade has consistently been on by a lot of people for the last 30, the theme of the show is 30 years, for the last 30 years. It's been a popular trade. When there are hiccups in it, some of the weaker hands get shaken out, but there are people that have that stick with it consistently.
Well, I mean,
that mirrors what you just said. They said on CNBC that if you think, you know, all of a sudden nobody's doing that anymore, you know, that everybody's out of that position, that's completely untrue.
Well,
part of what you're doing with carry trade is you're borrowing in one currency and lending out in a different currency, basically.
Right.
You know, getting out of all of that very quickly is a pretty tough prospect. If anything, you use some derivatives to hedge against how bad it's going at certain times, as opposed to actually getting out of it.
Well, you could. I mean, you and I think have been, you especially being the professor and writing books on this stuff. There's no free lunch in any of this. I mean, if anything.
No. No, anything that looks like that, I have a SIBO example in my mind. I don't want to use that one.
Okay.
But there are certain products, et cetera, for different companies that are kind of like just the gift that keeps on giving, and I feel like the carry trade's one that is available. Just one of those consistent positions that people can eke out decent gains with, maybe lever up and do better with. But as far as it being the cause of the other market volatility that we had, I don't think that's accurate after I've been digging into it.
I think you're probably right. I think if you got caught,
it's more of a, and this is something that, and we fall within this group. So I guess I'm allowed to say this, but this is one of the things that drives me crazy about the business media, is because when they get hung up on a topic like the carry trade, they claw into it, and you hear about it for 4 or 5 days in a row. You know, is it over? You know, have we gotten past that yet? I feel like there's an awful lot of lemmingness in everybody's talking, tends to talk about the same thing. They hear it and then they just repeat it from CNBC. I had students ask me about it, and we're not even in class right now. They've been emailing me about it.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like it was something that makes a cool chart that some people probably did get hurt with, but funny, the next time we get a really large move in the yen, you'll probably hear somebody on one of the business networks say something like, well, I thought everybody got out of the carry trade.
Oh yeah.
Because I'll be completely honest, when they started talking about it again, I was like, didn't everybody get creamed by this thing 20 years ago and didn't they learn their lesson? And then as I did the digging, it was some people got creamed, a lot of people stuck it out and have done very well with it for almost three decades now, and they're going to continue to.
Well,
as long as
maybe
there's an interest rate differential. They're going to continue to try.
Yeah. Well, let's go break a bit early so we can do these CPI numbers, but let's dig in a little bit more in this carry trade. I don't want to get too theoretical about how the difference in a
I'm dancing on a pin as far as trying to.
Well, I wanted you to give a shorter version of. I tried to explain earlier in the week that if something's implied volatility is like 5 or 6, like some of these currencies, they never move. When all of a sudden they move 3%, you're buried a hell of a lot more if you're short contracts than if a stock makes a 3% move when it has a volatility, an implied volatility of 50. I mean, one at 3% is expected, and one it's like, oh my God, right? Massive difference in the curvature with the rate of change of your delta is all of a sudden your stuff went from a ten delta to 100, right? That's a big difference. Where that's not going to happen in a stock. Anyway, let's go to break. Come back and do the CPI stuff. S&P futures up 350, NASDAQ futures up 10. Be right back.
Self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Andrew on the board. We're going to do an abbreviated thing here because this stuff's moving all over the place. We've got the S&P futures up 11 now. NASDAQ futures up 42. They were, NASDAQ was just down 50. Now they're up 40. So we're all over the place as these numbers came in. Seasonally adjusted month-to-month, 0.2 versus 0.1 expected. Ex-food and energy, 0.2. So kind of right about where everybody thought they were going to be. So we're just kind of flying around here, not doing all that much. But Andrew, why don't you give us a real quick traffic, weather, sports, and then we'll get back because the other markets are just settling in on this as well. No point in going through it right this minute.
All right. It is 7:31 here in Chicago. But going through sports a little quickly here, Cubs and Sox lost. Cubs lost to the Guardians. White Sox lost to the Yankees. And the Diamondbacks won over the Rockies. Over to Chicago weather, it is currently 67 degrees. We're going to have a high of 81 today. Some sun, some clouds throughout the day. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 92 degrees. They're going to have a high of 108. They're going to keep things pretty sunny with plenty of sunshine throughout the day. And finally, for Chicago traffic, thankfully no accidents to report on the major expressways. Still looking at that fire. Green Street is still closed in some areas, and if you're on the inbound and outbound Kennedy and Eisenhower, you can expect some delays. Thankfully, no major accidents to report on the expressways. That's all I got. Back to you, Chief.
If I were you, Russell, I'd go out and buy some crackers. Down 2% on the month. Just saying.
Down 2% on the month?
Yeah. We got bread's down 1.5%. I don't know. I just bought bread last week. It was the same price week before. I didn't see it down. But energy is flat. All right, we've got energy.
Well, energy has been flat.
Are you there? Did you mute yourself? Andrew, what'd you do with the AI? Did the Russians come in and get Russell?
I'm not sure. That might be the case right now.
Window coverings, I got down 2.6%. How do people even do this stuff? Anyway, but these, I'm just going through the big numbers. Men's suits down 4% in the month. That's women's underwear down 0.6%. There you go. We'll now get some new cars down 0.3%. New trucks down 0.2%. Motor vehicle tires up 0.4%. Vehicle parts and equipment other than tires up 0.9%. Let's get down here to medical care commodities up 0.2%. Prescription drugs up 0.1%. So there you go. Pet foods, pet food unchanged. It's, you know, this thing is, and this isn't even the real detailed one. The real detailed one. Well, hey, you're back.
Yeah, I'm back. Dog had to say so. I don't know why I was muted there.
Did you?
She heard you. You know what you did.
What I do?
You know what you did.
I didn't
pet
ask.
Food.
I didn't ask about the dog. I mentioned food.
You brought up pet food.
Oh God.
She's like, I'm worth it. About that.
Shelter's up 0.4%. That's one of the biggest
perfect
movers.
Timing. Stop that.
Yeah. So. You still have the three pooches?
One of them's up for adoption. It's got a great web. Has her own website up for adoption.
Why isn't somebody snagged her?
Well, yeah. You got to get interviewed. You got to go through a screening process. So, yeah. You got to qualify for this dog.
Ah.
So, I offered to pay the adoption fee if my next door neighbors would take her on.
There you go.
Yeah.
Ever tell you a story about my
Yeah, on the energy thing. I mean, I do think we were flat.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, that's just one area that we haven't really been experiencing it. What were the higher areas?
Well, the higher areas. Well, I mean, I'm just running through the list here. The some of the stuff is up. You know, license fees.
I'm fixated on housing.
All right, let me get to the housing. Rent of shelter. Up 0.3%. Shelter in general up 0.4%. So yeah, that was pretty high. Rent of primary residence, which is the wacky way they look at household expenses, is 0.5%. So that's pretty high. I mean, that's 6% on a year, right? But you know, so they only have it up. Let's see, 5.1% for the whole year. Mm-hmm. I don't know about that.
There's just all kinds of funky disconnects in the real estate market. And you know that. You've got somebody that you can bounce things off of.
Well, I also I'm wondering where the housing stuff here. I'm not seeing a insurance. Well, I guess I can get it here. Household insurance, they got up 3% of the year. I'm going to say that's a fictitious number.
That is wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, that is not even.
That's just wrong.
That's in the hilarious category, isn't it?
Oh my gosh! Yeah, I mean that in not so much for us because we're actually in, you know, we deal with winter but we're actually in a part of the country where we just don't tend to get too many natural disasters. So
right.
Our homeowners insurance is generally under control. But there are other parts of the country I've heard it's tripled on people over the last year.
Are you guys, you're more in the western burb. Now, Audrey's in Orland. Her area was like the epicenter of that massive hailstorm we had.
Yeah, I remember that.
I'm going to say that 60% of the people out there are getting new roofs. And these things are
cool.
60, 70, 90, 100 grand for these roofs.
They are not cheap.
Yeah, I mean, if you got a cedar shake roof and they're replacing that, ouch for the insurance company. Not that I, you know, want to hold a shingle out for those guys, but I'll bet there's five people on her block that got new roofs because of the hail damage.
Hmm. And you know, Iris is always basements.
Yeah, you know what's weird though, Russell, is a lot of people, and I, you know, I haven't spent so long since I owned a house. If you buy a set of tires, okay, and the tire has a defect, and it's 50,000-mile tires and has a defect, after 25,000 miles, they give you half of the price of a new tire, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, some of these roofs, for a few of Audrey's neighbors and so forth, you know, it's a 40-year roof, and they've lived there 30 years. All of a sudden, there's this hail damage. They're getting all the price. They're getting replacement value for the roof, which I'm happy for them. But I'm kind of surprised. I'm very happy for them, but I'm sort of surprised. We're not saying, okay, well, you had a 40-year roof, and by the way, you had it for 20 years. It's a 90 grand roof. We're giving you 45. But evidently, in the homeowner's policy, roofs are like a full replacement or something.
They're kind of important.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, we're not, because we had the basement flood, and we went through most of that. We're almost done with all of that. But I know somebody else who got the basement flooded, and they ripped everything out, and they haven't touched it since. Well, they just,
yeah.
It's not, but you couldn't do the same thing if you had a roof problem. That's where I was going with that.
Well, Russell, I want to get back a little bit. I mean, these numbers are right there. I don't see anything in here that's other than we still have inflation. And I think both of us agree that we're not up to where we really should be in 4 or 5 years of inflation. I mean, they got us up, 20%, and the number really ought to be 40 or something like that. But save that for another day. But this, I think, this carry trade, we don't want to be on it too much. Yet it is something that when you talk about the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Treasury, you have a much greater chance because you've got all the, the resource University of Indiana at your disposal. But I'm going to say it's going to be real hard for you to find out how much money is borrowed in Japanese banks by people in the U.S. for purposes of investing here at higher dough. I mean,
that's what we've been digging on, and that's what there's another professor and I that are we're actually I'll be talking to them shortly after I'm done talking to you. Because that's something that we are trying to figure out. There is data from the Bank of International Settlements, but because it's a multi-step trade, you've got to do a lot of digging. And then, of course, I'm going to make an ass out of myself by making some assumptions as well.
By the way, what do you call
it? It's not the easiest number in the world to back into, and then you could still miss it.
I guess where I'm kind of heading with this is we've talked about it, the mortgage crisis of 2007-08. Some percentage of that, and again, I don't know the intensity of that, was brought upon by the carry trade, right? When I say the carry trade, what we're talking about for everybody so we don't lose everybody, you ask yourself, the mortgages in 2007, 2006 were 6.5%, 6.75%. They weren't like 12 or 15, right? So most people that invest people's money, like me and like you have done in the past, we're not going to get sexually excited about a 6.5% rate, right? It's just sort of there. It's okay, but it's not, it's not something you're going to start, busting the piggy bank to do. So you might ask yourself, why was it so? Well, if I can borrow money over in Japan, if you and I pony up 200 grand and can borrow like 40 million from a bank in Japan
for basically nothing,
or even say 1%, and invested here at 6, even you and I can make money on a 4% spread on other people's money, right?
And then that sucker up.
Yeah,
and I really think the leveraging that sucker up, which again takes even more digging. I think that those are the type of people that really got hurt by the carry trade. I think the best transparent example behind that was the long-term capital thing.
Yeah.
In 98. That's because they were doing something similar. In fact, I recently read about their core strategy. It was really logical if they just stuck with that core strategy, which was the interest rate differential between new and Treasury securities that have been around for a while, and then they just decided to apply the same math to different types of markets. So I think the Not, and I assume not everybody is, when you talk about the carry trade, you know, if I'm short large caps and long small caps, there are a bunch of different ways I can go about doing that. I can do it with futures, you know, I can do it with the Russell futures, I can do it with the ETFs, I can do it with a basket of stocks, however I want to do it. And I think there are different, you know, versions of what would encompassingly be referred to as the carry trade.
Well, long-term capital,
yeah,
they took it one step further. They invested in Russia. Imagine what the returns were over there.
Well, they what they did was they bought Russian bonds. What they were doing was they were finding spread differentials.
Right.
But in the fixed income market, the strong bonds have lower yields and the weak bonds have higher yields. And the idea was they would come back together. And what they did, I don't even know if they had Russian exposure. But what happened was
coincident with Russia having a crisis. They, somehow or another,
right,
there
that's,
was...
That's where I'm going with this, yeah, is that their strategy had them owning very risky bonds, like Russian bonds, and short, less risky bonds, like U.S. Treasury bonds. And when Russia defaulted, everybody tried to dump all of their risky stuff and move into less risky stuff, which was exactly opposite of their trade. So they got by the Russia thing without having exposure to Russia.
Well, that see what
and I think there are people that got that are getting pummeled in got pummeled by some things that happened in the U.S. That weren't a direct impact on the carry trade, but created a situation where the carry trade started to be in trouble.
Well, they always end up with some sort of counterparty risk, or there's a missing leg someplace. I mean, you're talking about the Russell, the IWM, say, or the Russell against the high cap versus like the Qs or something. Well,
yeah.
And if you came to PTI and said, I want to do this, and Russell just said there's a million ways to do it. Well, probably the safest way in terms of risk would be, okay, I think the Qs are going to go way up and I think the Russell's going to go way down. I would say, well, let's just, you know, why don't you put this call spread on in the Qs and buy this put spread in the or you could actually sell a call spread in the Russell or buy the put spread. Okay, but now you know exactly what your risk is, okay. You can't get any worse.
Yeah.
It's all defined. You know, by the way, if you have a loser on one of them and you have a winner on the other, you're going to get paid on the winner. There's no counterparty risk. Your position is with the OCC, for God's sake. I mean, there's no... But what these guys do is they'll say, well, my short is with Russia and my long is with Argentina, and you sit there and go, wait a minute. just because you win on one doesn't mean you're going to get paid on the winner. And you got to pay the loser. So you got to be real careful.
Exactly.
When you talk about counterparty risk, a lot of these guys kind of go off the reservation on that, and they don't worry who the trade is with. You got to make sure that the winner can pay, because you got to pay on the loser, right?
And that's why you're better off doing. And just about all of us are, if we're going to do a trade like that, are going to be doing them with listed securities.
Yeah, and you can get there.
If I were big enough to be a swap and participate in the swap market, I could call up Goldman Sachs and say, I want to, you know, for the next 6 months, I want you to pay me the returns for the NASDAQ 100, and I will pay you the returns for the Russell 2000. And, you know, at the end of that agreement, one entity writes a check to the other entity. Now, if the entity that's got to write the check's not around anymore, like Lehman Brothers or Bear Stearns, that's a big issue.
Well, yeah, you got a problem. Well, that's why these currency. When I saw that move in the yen, you know, 3%. I mean, 3% in Dot Bomb Inc. is no big deal, but 3% in a currency is
it's huge. Yeah,
I immediately thought, Russell, that some bank somewhere, some small Japanese bank, if there are one or any, was having an issue, that somehow somebody couldn't come to the table, because there's my buddy Robert, he works for the Fed, Federal Reserve, and a lot of when people talk about the Federal Reserve, 99% of the people mean the policy group, Jerome Powell and those guys, and what they're doing politically, monetarily, who they're favoring. It's all the politics of it. But 99% of what the Fed does is every day making sure stuff clears for everybody. I mean, you couldn't write a check if there wasn't for a Federal Reserve. Well, you could write it, but it wouldn't go anywhere, right? But those guys, I've told the story before, the amount of, could you even put a number on the amount of currency transactions like between Europe and the U.S., between Japan and the U.S. every day? It's got to be like $80 billion or something.
I think it's the biggest market.
Yeah. So they used to, Robert said, and I forget which direction, that the dollar's going to Europe, maybe just before the euro dollar, you know, maybe it was the euro dollar, used to clear at 11 o'clock, and coming back the other way cleared at 12. And he said, sure enough, one day, some small bank, but now a small bank, you look at them and they look like a small bank, might have several million dollars of one of these transactions going back and forth just with their clients, people buying stuff in the U.S., selling stuff. Sure enough, they went out at like 11:30. And everybody had a scramble to cover it, you know, central banks, you know, being the banker of last resort. So finally, after like a whole bunch of study, everything clears at the last at the same time, back and forth. So essentially that can't happen. Well, that was probably, what, how many years of work for a whole bunch of really smart people to make that happen?
Yeah.
I mean, the normal stuff people take for granted is not easy, right? It's like, you know, flying a plane. It may look normal, but it's not easy, right?
Right.
Or being an economist or being a teacher. It may look, anybody can do it. No, they can't, right? It's just, it's one of those things. But does the fact that we could have a move like that, it's a one-off, Russell, or do you think it's a sign of something, I guess? And I'm asking you to, I mean, I'm worried about market making 2.5% and 3% moves every day and having NVIDIA having a $500 billion difference in market cap than it did 7 days ago. That's a lot of money, Russell. I don't think that kind of, I don't know whether it's bullish or bearish. It just makes me nervous. Am I just being grumpy or what?
Well, I mean, we're able to handle it so far, so I don't overly worry. I don't worry about the value of NVIDIA because, you know, it likely is very overvalued right now, but I think in time it might catch up with that because they've got no decent competitors at all. They kind of dominate, they completely dominate the market to the point of where I think they can actually turn away customers right now. And I don't think anybody's going to catch up with them technology wise. I don't feel like, I feel like there's so many landmines around the world that and maybe we have learned some lessons that implementing leverage, people are just not as willing to do it as they used to be. And, you know, the over-the-counter derivative market's not what it used to be as well because a good portion of those things are centrally cleared now. And there is data that you can kind of get an idea as to what the risk is within the over-the-counter market, whereas it used to be you had no freaking clue. You know, you may as well just look at a blank screen
because
you really didn't know it was almost impossible to back into what everybody was up to 15 years ago. Now, if you're even a small bank and you're involved in the swap market, in the over-the-counter derivative market, better way to say that, there is an entity, a central clearing entity that's watching your risk, the ISDA, the Swap Dealers Association. So luckily, we always we talk about how the regulators and everybody always plans for the last disaster, not a future disaster.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah.
I think they've done a good enough job planning for the last disaster, which over the counter derivatives had a lot to do with that, so that won't be the one that blows us up again.
Well, I'm gonna.
I think the one that's gonna blow us up is the private credit market or the private where, you know, non-bank entities are making bank-like loans to companies. And in the next couple of years, I believe a big percentage of those loans are coming up are going to have to be refinanced at higher interest rates. And that is the kind of business that people are using a lot of leverage in.
Well,
that's the one that worries me. And that's the one that you can't really get a complete handle on as well.
Well, Andrew, make a note of that one. Wait for next Wednesday, because I also want to talk a lot of, talk a lot about, you see some building in New York going for like $8 million that was, you know, $300 million. Somebody's eaten at 292, and the question is, who the hell is this somebody? But that's a big discussion. What I want to get you today, though, if you don't mind, since you are our expert, somebody was asking me the other night, was that spike in the VIX essentially legit?
And I wrote a whole article about that.
Okay. You want to? Can you? Should we?
Went out over the weekend. And here's the thing with VIX.
Do we have it? Can we forward it?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's under my Substack. It's just russellrhodes.substack.com.
Can you flip it to Andrew? Or can we? Andrew, find it.
Yeah, it's a. I'm not difficult to find. I'm not hiding.
All right. Well, I know that.
So. But one of the things with VIX, you know, we get VIX starting at 2 a.m. in Chicago now, and it's based on SPX option trading, you know, in the pre-market session. So when you get, you know, when there's a lot of risk and market makers really prefer not to trade, they widen out their bid-ask spreads, and I think the widening of the bid-ask spreads probably contributed about 15 points to that move.
Okay.
It's that 65 was hit with, shortly about an hour before the market opens, and then when the market opened, you know, the daily high for VIX had already been achieved, and it was starting to work its way down. 38% of the daily highs for VIX since we've had extended hour VIX occurred before the U.S. stock market opened.
Kind of makes you wonder whether that's. Kind of makes you wonder whether it should be trading before the market opens.
It's not trading; it's just being quoted.
Oh, okay.
And the futures are trading, and people don't really trade the futures off of the index. And people are very aware of the excess volatility. And I think people trading VIX understand what I'm saying right now.
Well, unless you've been in, and I know you know this because you're probably the best writer ever on the VIX, but. I have a pretty good feel for the VIX, too, since I was in the crash of 87. Nothing gives you a feel.
The 150 VIX.
Yeah. Implied volatility.
Would have gone to that day.
Implied volatilities in some of the near term were actually like 300, but I don't think it ever got in the calculation. But this is, how can I say this in a simple way to do it? And I know you're right about, you know, before the opening and so forth, but 2-3 weeks ago, if you were still hanging down here and you were with our group having an adult beverage, a couple of the guys that are there are risk managers for some of these really big, what do they call them now, liquidity provider firms. Essentially, when people go to protect their portfolios, all right, they'll go buy puts, all right? So there's people who... There's not a whole lot of natural put sellers out there unless people have spare cash and want to, you know, sell the puts lower and if the stock goes down there, they're willing to take it there. It's called a covered put. Okay, you can even do that in IRA, mm-hmm. by the way. But generally, we used to have an awful lot of market makers in the OEX, which was the VIX at the time, and everybody had kind of a hard limit on how many puts you could sell. And I was willing to sell puts as a market maker to make the market. But I wasn't about to sell insurance to Goldman Sachs. I mean, not only was I not about to, I wasn't able to. So everybody sort of has this limit. And all of a sudden, when the market starts to go down, the whole world wants puts. Well, guess what? There's not enough natural put sellers and there's not enough market makers to dish those out. So a couple of weeks before, Russell, I'm having a cocktail with these guys, and one dude was saying, we're having real problems maintaining our risk profile. Because everybody wants to buy these out-of-the-money puts, and some of them, they do commodities, they do everything. And he says, and, you know, those guys, if their risk is too high, they have to pay a fine to the clearing firm. I'd never known that. But they do. And he goes, yeah, we're paying these fines because guys just can't, you know, they're way out of the money. I mean, somebody comes in, you know, just as a laugher and says, and I see these because I still get the, you know, the stuff where unusual option trading. I mean, somebody will go in and he'll say, let's say for gold, I'm not even talking about, you know, GLD is the ETF for gold. It's trading 228, or it goes up a little bit this morning. Somebody will come in and buy, you know, 20,000 of the 280s or some crap, right? Mm-hmm. You might say, well, those are like Armageddon options, right? I mean, what does the world have to happen for gold to run to 2,800 all of a sudden? I mean, you know, a couple of wars, who knows? I mean, could it get there? Sure, it could. Well, you sell that, now you sit there and go, what am I going to do with these 20,000 options I just sold? I mean, one firm is probably not going to do it, but say four of them sell 5,000 apiece. Well, now you're somewhat frozen because you really can't sell a hell of a lot more, right? Because your units are so big. What if it does go there? I'm not going to take the firm out with this one trade. So now every time somebody goes and buys these, I'll say, fly-in-the-sky Armageddon trades, somebody's on the other side of it, and it affects their risk, it affects their margins, because there's minimums on even any individual contract, right? So
yeah,
if all of a sudden you have a 2 or 3 week period where everybody smells the market being at a high, or it's an election or something, when people, there's a limit to where people just can't sell. So VIX, the implied volatility, doesn't go, it might go from 12 to 13 to 14 grudgingly, but once it gets to 30, and I want you to critique this, it could go from 30 to 60 in a second because I'm just not selling anymore. So it's really not a linear product. I mean, I don't know how I can explain that any better. Maybe you can.
And implied volatility is not.
It ends up being the VIX, right?
No, it's not when you see the distribution of all the different VIX quotes and everything, it's very clumped and then, you know, spiky.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, but when I was at SIBO and I had to choose my language carefully, I would refer to the stock market selling off as a volatility event. And a volatility event was a spike on the VIX chart.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, and it comes right back down, too.
Well,
you know, the thing is, you talked about it, should it be trading in the pre-market hours? It does trade in the pre-market, or the futures trade in the pre-market hours. And I think the high was 37.10 on the front month future when the index went to 65, which is how VIX behaves, because you can't do a fair value relationship between VIX and the futures contract.
Well, there's two underlying.
So the index could run up to, you know, the index could run up to 100 right now. Because of some sort of goofy glitch, and the traders are not going to bid the front month future up to it.
Oh, right. Well, the front will probably carry a bigger premium to the next.
Oh, they do.
Yeah.
That happens, and actually, in quieter market periods, the farther dated futures are at higher prices.
Well, that's for sure. Hey, thank you very much, Russell. Good stuff as usual. Mm-hmm. Where are you? Are you home or are you in Indy?
I'm home. I drove home from Indy yesterday and listened to a long, long, long call.
Oh, well, that's cool.
Listen to a long.
They still have that huge. I haven't been that way in a while. That huge windmill area. They all turn it, or they got them stopped?
They were all turned off yesterday. I drove down and came back, and they only turn them on when, you know, there's a high demand for power. And, you know, yesterday it was 72 degrees and sunny, and everybody had their windows open. You could actually, if you were in a bubble and the only thing you had to look at was the windmills, you'd be able to tell whether we had decent weather or bad weather.
It's pretty scary because,
really,
I mean, like,
when they're spinning.
Well, your Commonwealth Edison.
It's really hot, and they're spinning when it's really cold.
Well, Commonwealth Edison's only going to get it when they need it, which should be exactly the opposite. They should be using that all the time and using the other stuff when you need it, but. That's not how these utilities are set up. One of these days we'll talk about that. Russell, thanks again, buddy. S&P futures up 8, NASDAQ is up 37, so kind of a muted response to the CPI that came out exactly where we thought it would. So I guess it's wait till next month. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.